Welcome to another episode of the Reboot Chronicles, a no-holds-barred forum with global leaders, authors, entrepreneurs, and CEOs about how organizations stay focused on growth and innovation in unprecedented times. I'm your host, Dean DeBias, coming to you live from Reviv's North American headquarters in Chicago, and we would like to thank you for joining us from around the globe today. I'd like to welcome Klaviyo's CEO, Andrew Bialecki, to the Reboot Chronicles. Andrew co-founded CRM ESP provider from a bootstrap phase to a market-leading status, taking it public last year at over a $9 billion valuation. Pretty impressive. He leads a 1,500-person team that serves 143,000 organizations in 80 countries with revenues over $700 million. I'm probably being conservative there. Andrew, it's good to see you.
Hey, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Quite a rocket ship you've been on there at Klaviyo, and I'm always fascinated with the founder stories. It's like, what did you think you were going to build? And this goes back to, I think, 2012, though we're not into dates much on this show, but that's, you know, over a decade ago, so last decade. How did it start out, and what have you learned along the way?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's fun to look back at. It's, you know, the compounding is a real thing. Like, it's been 12 years, but I remember we were a bit unique for software companies. We bootstrapped our company. So, you know, there's no outside investment.
Very rare. Wow.
And it took us, it's interesting. I remember those first 3 years, and I joke with our team. It's like, you know, we probably got to maybe $1 million in, you know, revenue in 3 years. Right. And then you think the next 9 years and just how much it compounds. So, perseverance is a thing. I think when you're starting a company, but anyways, you asked about like, how we got started. So, yeah. So what does Klaviyo do? Klaviyo is this scalable brain, scalable voice for any consumer business. We work with over 143,000 customers, businesses like Mattel, Dollar Shave Club, if you remember their viral video, Good American, you know, these like iconic brands, some of them that are, you know, been around for decades, some that have just popped onto the scene in the last couple of years. So lots of customers around the globe. What are we doing? I believe the future, we talk about CRM. What is that?
Yeah.
You know, the concept for Klaviyo when we started was, I thought a lot of businesses, my co-founder and I, we thought a lot of businesses and consumers, a lot of those relationships were mediated by humans, by people. So if you wanted help, I remember like 10 years ago, you want to change something about your cable bill. You have to call somebody and sit on the phone. We thought that's like, well, that's silly. Like, that's not the future.
Painful.
The future is
painfully, you know, silly.
Yeah. I mean, like, businesses should offer, you know, not people to talk to, because, you know, people are, you know, they don't, you know, they're single threaded. They're not 24/7. Hey, wouldn't it be better if instead, you know, consumers can interact with software and get an experience that's as good as talking to a person, a human expert? And even better, like with machine learning, what if that software actually could be even smarter, right? It could evolve. So that was the concept, is we said, okay, well, if we're going to do that, we're going to allow any business to have this kind of super scalable, like scale themselves to all their customers. So we think about the scalable brain, everything you know about your customers, your consumers,
right?
And then give them the way to connect. So we actually started out building in the early days, this like database that was just great at storing all your consumer data. And then on top of that, you know, we went to our customers and asked them like, well, what are you doing with this? Because we're exporting this data out, you know, running all these queries. And they're like, well, we're importing it into our marketing system. And we said, oh, well, okay, well, we can do that too. And, you know, I've always been fascinated by email, because it's, you know, the web is like this really open protocol. And email is kind of, you know, it's just the web, but in an envelope, right, in your inbox. And it's also an open protocol, and anybody can, you know, it's easy to get an email address. There's no walled gardens. And we said, okay, great. So we're going to build marketing software that allows anybody to send a message that's not, you know, this is saying in marketing, batch and blast, one size fits all. Everybody gets the same thing. You know, it's not the way it works. If you use any social media app, like, everybody's experience is tailored to them, right? Everybody's feed is different. So we said, okay, we're going to do the exact same thing.
At the time, the marketing systems they were exporting your data into were like made in the last century, for gosh sakes.
It was definitely an opportunity when we looked at some of the, you know, and it's a little bit in the weeds, but we looked at the underlying, that's right, databases and the underlying technology. We're like, wow, a lot of this stuff is from the 90s, you know.
Exactly.
You upgrade that to what, you know, what's possible today. Right. All of a sudden, a lot of these things that everybody wanted, you know, personalization, you know, real time, that was just a lot more possible.
Yeah, personalization is all the rage. A lot of AI FOMO going on out there by, quite frankly, public CEOs. The amount of time it's mentioned in conference calls now, Probably doesn't mirror as much as they were mentioning other things like virtual worlds and all that stuff a few years back. But when you look at the AI impact on your business, it's like from a marketing perspective, I haven't been that impressed with a lot of stuff that I've seen out there. It's just regurgitating words and coming up with these stupid offers that you know, aren't necessarily helping, I don't think, the marketing team. But what do you think is the promise as you're revving it up and bringing AI into these platforms that's really going to help these brands and retailers and e-com providers kind of accelerate their results, you know, more than just cranking out more emails. I hate to break it down to the bones here, but there's a lot of, you know, AI talk. And then there's like, hey, this actually needs to make a bigger impact is my biggest issue these days.
Yeah. So as somebody that, I remember, I'll compare AI to kind of the internet, right? Yeah. I remember, first time, using a web browser, I think my aunt or uncle sent me a $20, Amazon gift certificate, right? You could buy a book and it would just show up. You have to go to Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
Nice. But you saw that kind of, the sort of promise of, let's take the internet, right? Hey, information can be real time, it's going to be everywhere. You're going to be able to buy, transact, all this kind of stuff. Like it took a while for that to actually happen. And I think, exactly. I think one thing we're really thoughtful about is, how much of this is hype for there's actually like a game plan. So, I do think AI is real and it's something that we've been working on, now for 6 or 7 years. And here's the way that we think it's going to unfold. When you think about a lot of software that you use today, software that's on your phone, it's on your computer,
right?
A lot of that software is productivity software. Steve Jobs has this wonderful analogy of like, the computer is like a bicycle for your brain. It just makes you more productive. And the software applications that you install are like, and they're largely, you point and click with a mouse or with your finger to go get things done. There's very little where you actually tell the software, hey, here's what I'm trying to accomplish, and the software just figures it out for you. So what's interesting is we're fascinated by, well, why is that the case? I mean, at the end of the day, when we're using software, we're sort of kind of somewhat randomly, stochastically, kind of point clicking around to try to figure out what to do to make the software accomplish what we want to accomplish. Well, shouldn't the software be smart enough to kind of watch what we're doing, learn from that, and then either suggest or guide us on what actions to take? And then eventually, if it just sort of makes lots of good suggestions, think about like the Maps app on your phone. I mean, it becomes like directions. You just follow the directions because you're like, well, of course they're right. And and you're like, well, actually, if I didn't have to hold the wheel, like I kind of just wish the car would drive itself, right? And just follow the directions. I don't even need to pay attention. So I think we're on the precipice of moving from this era of software that's productivity, where it just makes you faster at a task, to software that you're just going to say, hey, here's what I want to accomplish, and it's going to go get it done. Now, to do that, there's like two key ingredients. The first is you need what in statistics, data science, we call like, you need a reward function. You need some outcome metric. You need to know what you're optimizing for. So in Klaviyo's case, if you think about, let's think about what we do with marketing or customer experience, there's lots of ways to measure that. You can measure that based on the amount that somebody, in retail businesses, how much somebody buys, with a service business, how much somebody consumes of that product. So if you have that reward, kind of mechanism, you can start to correlate that with like the actions that people take inside of our software. And so you could say like, okay, well, we have marketers, they're logging in, they're running various marketing campaigns, and some are more successful than others, but they don't really know why. And so you can start to say, okay, well, I know, one, I can measure who's actually being successful and not. That's critical. And then two is you just need lots of data points. And then you can use, kind of the basic building blocks of statistics, regressions, et cetera, to kind of figure that out. So I think that's what's happening with artificial intelligence is we're now entering this era where the software that we use, if we can kind of define what that outcome is we want, it's going to get a lot better.
Yep.
And so what we get really excited about is, think about things like large language models in the last couple of years. Those are a great tool. They're great for content generation. Like we'll see where they end up. Like if they get better at sort of the reasoning, maybe they can do some of these like figuring out what correlates with what or what's causation. But for anybody that's a consumer of software, whether if you're using software, you're thinking about building it, I think what you need to think about is when you create an app, let's say, normally you think about how it makes the user's life, faster, better, more productive. I think you need to think about what's the ultimate goal that they're trying to accomplish and how can you collect the data points of how people are using it.
Right.
So you can then correlate those two things and build, you know, algorithms, agents, if you want to use AI parlance, that will sit on top of that, that will start to do the job for the user. And I think one of the cool parts for us at Klaviyo is, you know, I think actually we kind of intentionally started with marketing because it's actually very measurable. Like if you think about, you know, if you're writing, you know, say you're writing an essay, it's actually pretty hard to figure out like, well, what's the reward function there? Like what is the outcome I want? But in our case with marketing, it's actually pretty straightforward, right? You can measure customer engagement in a variety of ways, like we talked about.
Yeah. So you just answered three of my follow-up questions, which is great. So it's a great setup. When you look at the next, I don't know, I'll give you 5 years since you're public. What does the product roadmap look like? Let's just say, start with your industry. You have a lot of competitors from the big dogs like Salesforce down to the little guys. You're not little anymore. So where do you see it all going? And then how does that change your product roadmap?
So I'll split it in two parts. I mean, I talked a little bit about this, like automation. I'll come back to that in a second. The first thing is we're very big believers that the future of the way customer experiences are delivered, like the way that consumers get delighted by businesses, or really anything, could be your doctor, right? Or even a school teacher, that it's going to be driven by software, with humans guiding it, it's not going to be humans that are the ones that are actually delivering the experience. We can build great digital experiences that are as good or better than the ones that we ourselves could deliver to somebody. So that's one. So if you think about that with marketing, what we've done is we've actually focused a lot on the messaging side. Hey, I, as an organization, a business, I have something to share. I'm one of our shows. I'm Mattel and I have some new Hot Wheels coming out. And if you've got kids, then we want to let them know that like those new cars are, that they're live. But that's just one way that consumers interact with the business. Like that's sort of the business sharing to the consumer. Consumers often have questions. So you think of that as customer service. They like to come into the store, so to speak. So that's, you can think of a website or a mobile app. So one thing we're working on at Klaviyo is how do we cover all of those different interfaces between a consumer and a business? So that's part one. It's just building the software that allows you to personalize and measure every single interface between a business and a consumer. And then the second part that I mentioned is how do we make it so that it doesn't require, somebody who's an expert anymore? If you're an entrepreneur and you're just starting a business, I talk to thousands of these folks every year. They'll say, Andrew, I don't know what the right marketing strategy is. Like, and I'm not the first person to do this. I built a great product. Can you help?
Right.
And I do think the future is you ought to be able to plug your business into software like Klaviyo's, and it will automatically guide and recommend where you can be the kind of editor-in-chief or the director. So I think both of those things are going to happen. One of the sayings we have internally is we do believe that like the best products and the best services can win. And we want to build software that allows like more people to create things in the world, build smart digital relationships with consumers and have those businesses be more successful.
Yeah, I think that's what's been missing is, many of your competitors and yourself it's just really just a platform of tools and people use it, meaning customers, clients that are going after consumers. And it's been primarily an outbound tool. There's a whole nother group of people that work on inbound where AI is making a huge impact. But when you look at just how these companies use it, I like what you said about just not only is it a package, a platform, it's like, it's almost a consulting tool now. It tells you how to do it, what to do, and how to like build these intuitive campaigns. Or I think, as you said, how do you have a scalable brain? Most companies don't. And you call on a lot of small companies. So these are not people that they have expertise, time, or the people to do any of this stuff. So that makes sense. Do you see that also happening as you move up into larger accounts? You've got some enterprise customers, but you've primarily been SMB, right?
Yeah. So when we started out, both my co-founder and I mean, we had small businesses were part of our family, part of our heritage.
Right.
And so we love this idea of like, we want to help everybody. And what I've found consistently about small businesses, entrepreneurs, is they're very smart. They're incredibly driven. They just, exactly like you said, they lack for the time. Well, I can't learn everything. There's just not enough hours in the day. I have to do every job. So I can't, I can't specialize.
Right.
They're in a rush. They want to get going. So it's like anything you can do to speed up that process matters. And what's interesting is for larger, for more enterprise businesses, what we found is this drive and the hustle is there. Now they actually have more time to devote to the craft, but they're still frustrated at the speed they can go. You know, one of the things we talk about on our product team is if you're trying to build the next generation of any product category,
right,
an evergreen way you can go about that is just make that product faster and more intuitive. Like literally fewer clicks and less time to understand how to use it. So when we talk to larger enterprise, oftentimes they're like, look, I've got hundreds of ideas, but you know how hard it is for me to wrangle software to actually run an experiment? And the unlock for them is to go from, okay, well, how do we go from say running an experiment, you know, a week or a month to like, how about we run one every day? And it's fun. Like, I think this is, if you think about the future of work, I mean, this is, you know, whether it's software as just being, you know, greater usability or it's software that can drive itself. I mean, the goal is like getting, let's take marketing as an example, folks out of the drudgery of the rote part of the job and back to doing the strategic, the creative parts. And that's what we see a lot from our enterprise customers is they're just excited because we just give them a tool where they can run literally thousands of experiments in a year. And they know, you know, that correlates strongly with like delivering a better customer experience and better growth for the business.
Yeah, there's an evolution there because they have hired a lot of mechanics, really. They don't necessarily have all the right people to go back to the creative side. It's interesting because they thought they were managing software. It's like, no, you're managing our top line and bottom line. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I'll tell you one story. As I was talking to a large cosmetics company about a month ago. And, the person that runs marketing there was telling me, they're like, Andrew, I've retrained all of our marketers that use your software. Nice. I basically taught them kind of the basics of programming because what he realized was your software is effectively like a visual programming tool. Like if you think about those ones that kids use, like Scratch and things like that.
Right.
He's like, it's basically the same thing. And so actually a lot of his asks to us were, you know, things you'd think engineers would ask, right? Could I have a good debugger, right? Is there a way to like, you know, organize things into different, you know, repositories effectively? So what was very interesting there is this analogy of like, he's like, I'm literally training folks to think with this new paradigm that I think is the future of, you know, think about software as, right, productivity on steroids, and then, you know, we'll, you know, eventually be able to like hopefully run more of itself, optimize itself.
And it's kind of a low code, no code, AI, descriptive, so yeah, it's giving them all these things that they didn't have before. So it sounds like you're on the right track, but that whole, I don't know, retraining is kind of a mechanical word, but it's a little bit too cryptic. But it's like that whole evolution of the workforce thing, it's exciting to see it happen. It kind of takes me back to your product roadmap a little bit and your go-to-market strategy here. It's like when you look at most of the things that are going on, it's outbound. What about inbound? Consumers contacting whatever the brand, the retailer, the e-com provider.
Yeah, so I'll tell you like one of the projects that we're we're working on, and it's a smaller one, but I think it's gonna be important. So if you think about Klaviyo, right? It's a very interesting thing. So I'll tell you about what I think is going to happen. So we mentioned we started if you're a business owner and you have thousands or millions of customers, you can't possibly remember all of them. You need this like database to be the brain for your business. Great.
Right.
Well, one thing we noticed was it was not just businesses that wanted that. It's actually consumers that want that too. Like, you know, if you think about your relationship to all of the businesses that you buy from, organizations you're affiliated with, it's everywhere, right? It's in your inbox, it's on your phone, it's a little bit in your head.
Not to mention passwords and security with all
right.
that.
Everything, right?
Yeah. Overwhelming.
Think about the times you've met, gave you an example of like a business, it could be a retail brand that they said, hey, Dean, you've got to try this out. I'll give you an example from my personal life. I do a lot of running and I, mostly buy one brand of shoes. All right. Somebody recommended one of the new, I think it was On Running, and said, hey, you got to try out these shoes. So I'm like, okay, well, I kind of have my style.
You're using Brooks probably.
I want them to know instantly like the kind of runner that I am,
yeah.
Right? Like I'm not an elite athlete, but I, do run a fair amount. But if you think about that as a consumer, we have all this data that's ours. And yet it's hard to bootstrap our relationship with a new business. And I think that actually prevents a lot of us from trying out new products. So something that we're working on is what would it mean for a consumer to have access to all of the data that they own And so you can think inside of, you know, the Klaviyo universe, there's actually like, you know, I'm probably in there because I buy from a lot of our brands.
Right.
I'm probably in there hundreds of times. Like there's a really complete profile of who I am and what I like. And so how can we then help consumers and businesses match up with each other? Like, so there's a real opportunity there. You know, we think about the stage one is how do you help businesses with their existing customers deliver a great experience? Then step two is how do you help businesses with consumers they don't know yet bootstrap that relationship so they can instantly, right, in the first few seconds, deliver as if they've known that person forever.
Right.
And then probably phase three is how can you do matchmaking, right? How can you help, you know, consumers connect with businesses that like, hey, you're actually really probably likely to like this. And so we want to facilitate that.
Yeah. It's brilliant. That's a great exchange concept. So when you look at Web3 types of companies, the democratization of data and me being in control. So a lot of companies are trying that. I do a couple talks on this. The oligopolies hate what you just said. They don't want to let go of that power. So it's good you're a public company and somewhat well-funded because if you build that right, it totally changes the model. But as you know, it's, you know, the amount of time to get that going is a tough one. I find a lot of, call it the big 7 or 10 or whatever you want to call them there, they don't love it because it's like, we don't want to lose control. You know, we're still working on an ad model here from the 90s that's paying for everything. But I love that. That's probably the best product roadmap I've ever heard because it takes you, what most companies are held back from a leadership perspective is like, this is a whole different model upside down. I mean, just for people to comprehend what you just said, most of the customers that you call on probably go, what? Why do I want to do that? I want to own the data. So it brings up the...
Well, let me make one point on that.
Yeah, like
what's fascinating is we've had this, you know, our mission at Klaviyo, our mission statement that's on the wall, right?
Yeah.
Is empower creators and builders, people that build companies, right? Or products, services, to own their destiny. And this word ownership, we think about in two ways. One is this is like enablement, right? It makes it faster, easier. So if you don't have a lot of time, we'll help you do it. The other one though is every business I talk to wants direct relationships with their customers.
Right.
And especially for consumer businesses, there's this real, there's a dependence on, well, how do customers find me? How do I stay in touch with them? So obviously we're very focused right now on solving the problem of like, okay, well, once somebody walks into your store, into your business, it could be your website, they join an email or a text messaging list. Now you should be able to deliver an amazing experience. And we're trying to just level it up so that experience is just as good that, you know, business is offering on their own.
Yep.
It's just as good as what you might expect from one of the, you know, larger platforms. But there's this real tailwind, I think, for businesses of we want direct relationships with consumers. And for consumers, I think if businesses can deliver on that, there's a lot of value in, you know, just the creativity of what individual brands can do. You know, the value of aggregation is sort of pulls everything together, makes things a little bit faster to find. The challenge is it sort of forces some amount of standardization, right? And so we think that there's an opportunity there of like, well, where there's standardization, we can allow brands to be more creative, and that can be really compelling to consumers.
A lot of data. So when you look at scalable brains and flipping the business model, what you worry about data breaches and stuff with all these brands, and are you is that something you guys are leading a charge on?
Yes, I mean security. I have this. We talk about internally. I remember when I was a kid, and my parents took me to the local bank. Right, and this is when banks had, you know, like they had big bank vaults, and there were tellers.
Yeah,
I remember looking at the vault and being like, "Wow, okay, so you take your $5 and you put it in your savings account." And it's like, oh, is that $5 bill? Like, I guess literally goes in that vault, huh? And it's like, that probably wasn't the way it was, you know, when I was growing up in like the 90s, but at least it felt that way, right? It's like it was secure.
At one point it was,
So I show this picture a lot internally. I said, look, if we're going to be this, you know, central source of truth, this brain, it's like, it's got to feel secure to all of our customers.
Right.
So
exactly.
Security is like, it's sort of the foundation. It's the level zero, as we say, it's the bedrock of what we do. So allowing you to, you know, pull all your data together and then know that data is going to be used in the right way. And what's interesting is I think that using that data in the right way, it comes up in all sorts of contexts. I mean, one is obviously, data breaches, like you described. So we have, you know, great security teams, that have been working on that, I mean, since we started. But now there's interesting things of, well, what's the right way to use that data as relates to your consumers? You know, as people do more machine learning, I talk to a lot of our customers that are worried about, you know, using that data appropriately. What's overfitting? What's, you know, data sets that's, you know, it's overly personalized, right? Is going to feel like, what's that creepiness threshold? So I think everything from just outright like storage of data to then how it gets leveraged, those are really fascinating things. And I think there's all these norms that, you know, we intuitively know as humans, right? Like we know what we would find, you know, if we have a friend or a family member, like if they knew things about us, what we would find like sort of appropriate or not. I think a lot of businesses are trying to figure that out too. And so we spend a lot of time, you know, building those norms into our products or, you know, asking folks like, hey, so how do you want to use this data? Where is that threshold?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean to get too geeky with you there, but it's really where this is all leading. When you look at your growth roadmap, go to market, how do you feel about partnerships? You know, I know you built a lot of this stuff in-house and you guys are experts at certain things, but when you kind of look at the next phase of growth, what's your thought on building versus buying and borrowing?
All are on the table for us. So I'll tell you like our basic philosophy. At our core, we're builders.
Yep.
I think one thing that can go wrong with software companies is they build something and then they sort of forget how to build.
Yep.
You know, they become obsessed with growing and, you know, they sort of don't challenge themselves to build the next product or the next generation of that product. And then they sort of psych themselves out psychologically. So we've had a norm internally that's like, we're going to be builders. And in fact, we probably push that to the extreme. There's some things where there's probably off the shelf software. I mean, that could be for internal stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Like we have a little voting app that we use during our all hands, you know, every week.
Right.
And that was built by some engineers internally. Like there are a ton of probably more functional, fully featured, you know, apps.
Hundreds. Hey, at least you're saving the monthly expense of that.
Right. But we're like, no. We're just going to run it ourselves. And it leads to very funny things of, you know, people, you know, anyways, manipulating all this stuff. So at our core, we're builders. Now that said, we love, you know, I think if you build a brain for a business, I mean, what we found is there's a lot of other companies that either want to contribute data into that, you know, that brain,
exactly,
or they want to leverage the thinking or the data that's there for their own applications. So we've got a partner ecosystem. You know, we have over 5,000 partners, both software partners and, you know, service partners, folks that like help, you know, our customers use Klaviyo, and 300, you know, software integrations into Klaviyo. And so we've really focused on like, how do you make that scalable? So I think that's actually, you know, as we found new use cases for Klaviyo, it's interesting. I'd probably have a conversation every week.
Yep.
With a startup that's built something that says, oh, well, I'm the Klaviyo for X. And we're like, well, that's really interesting. Like, so what is that, you know, kind of Klaviyo for X mean?
It's always an honor when
they
say that, yes.
Yeah, no, it's a great feeling, right? But in that case, we're very intentional of like, oh no, like we want to encourage that. In fact, we've gone so far as to say is even some of our competitors, we've said, look, if you want access to the data we have, I mean, if it's the right thing to do for the customer, then like, great, we'll give you access to that because it's just that important,
yep,
you know, for the business.
Hey, on the personal side, what kind of reboots have you gone through in your life that might help some of our listeners out there?
Yeah, well, but the first thing, we talked a little bit at the top of, you know, we've been at it for 12 years and I'm excited for the next 12 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about that first 3 years, it's, you know, I remember, you know, having holidays, right? Thanksgivings here in the US,
yeah,
you know, Christmas holidays, where I had my like laptop with me and I'm at this like, you know, big dinner with family members and you're grinding through it. So to anybody that's listening, like it takes time, right? And you have to really, perseverance matters. So for me, I'd say there's probably the biggest one was, you know, when I was in college, I was a physics major and I was thinking about, you know, I was majoring in astronomy. In physics, you know, the rule is you either study really small things, quantum mechanics, or study really big things like galaxies. So I was a big thing person. But I realized partway through, I didn't want to go do that. Like I didn't want to pursue a PhD. So halfway through undergrad. And I was lucky enough that I had a roommate that was into computer science. And I remember graduating saying, well, I really want to get into this. And I literally applied to, I think, like 10 companies. And I got, you know, a job offer from like two. Because like, yeah, you don't have a computer science degree. Like you're not a real programmer. So for me, I remember I graduated and I was going to start a job, you know, kind of late in the summer. I bought this, by the way, is not the best way to go learn programming. I bought this big fat Java textbook and just like would just read every day, like chapters. That's not a good way to learn programming. You better just grab a IDE and learn that way. But I had to like just bootstrap those skills. And so I often think in my career, the first couple of years was all about learning how to be a great engineer. And as part of that, the company I joined, this is like kind of early days of web software, you know, they didn't really have anybody in design. And so I decided, okay, well, I'm going to get really good at design too. And that got me into product.
Bingo.
And so when we started Klaviyo, I felt like my one unfair advantage was, I was like, I know how to build products. Well, then came kind of like, you know, I'd say like reboot number two, or you know, like the next big hurdle, which was, okay, well, everybody knows just because you build a great product does not mean people are going to show up. I remember, you know, I would again, just back to the reading, would find all these like sales, you know, how-to books by people that I thought were great. And I'd read them. And as we were building our sales team, after we got a little bit of traction, I remember just like trying to figure out how this thing works. So I think this concept of, you know, whether you call them, you know, having a growth mindset, you know, I think what's cool about the word reboot is this, like, it's like a step change. It's not just a little thing. It's like, you got to take a big swing.
Right.
I think, you know, in your career, you have, like, I think the worst thing that happens to folks is people get to the steady state where they're like, yeah, I can't do any more reboots. I can't do any more big leaps. And it's all psychological. So I challenge everybody at our company. It's like, what are you going to learn in the next 6-12 months that is going to totally change how you think about yourself? What skill? And it's usually like, sometimes it's a soft skill, like a behavior, but often it's a hard skill that you're like, yeah, I'm not good at that. And I've never been good at that. And so I'm kind of just written it off. So how are you going to attack that? So those were the first two for me. Like, one was getting good at the product engineering. And the second was like figuring out how to build a go-to-market engine. And now, I mean, there's probably been at least half a dozen more of those as we've grown up.
Great advice. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks, Andrew. You've been listening to Klaviyo's CEO, Andrew Bialecki. And this is Dean Tobias with the Reboot Chronicles. I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll see you all soon.